So you have a itinerary and your love overlanding. You have plans to do it big on the trace and some super glamping. One idea, deep news and reviews, a podcast the first rate and here just for you. You don't have to think about it, join us and be about it. Something interesting we want to hear about it. Come on, let's talk about it. Welcome to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints Podcast.
Sponsored by Midland. Communication for every adventure. The industry leader in radio communication technology and innovation for over 50 years. Sponsored by MyMedic. Sponsored by Tembo Tusk. Sponsored by Shower Pouch. Sponsored by DeMoss Collective. Mission built and made for mobility. Sponsored by BrewTrek. Sponsored by Hard Impact Designs.
Always remember, the opinion you follow should be your own. Just consider the things stated here to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
What up, Mike?
What's going on, Phil? How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. I'm still kind of decompressing from returning home from the trip. It was I was busy the whole weekend. I'm sure you know you were right there with me. How are you?
Same, ditto. It was a long trip to east to west coast, and then back from west to east. And the weekend is always full of adventure and always busy, obviously. So I'm not sure I've recovered yet. Actually, it's because we're talking today. It's Thursday, right? So I just got back on Monday night. Really, actually Tuesday morning. Really. So
I actually haven't recovered altogether either, and I've got a couple of events to go to next week. So
yep.
I can't believe I committed to all these things. I'm having fun at them. It's just the in-between time where I spend a whole day sleeping and to recover, walking all those miles. So what did you think of the Overland Expo this year at Pacific Northwest?
I thought it was excellent. I mean, I love the venue, as we've talked about before. I mean, I still think it's the best venue out there. It was busy. It was just a very different experience for me because I didn't have a truck. So that was interesting. But I was busy. I did a lot of instruction, did a lot of, you and I did some podcasts, talked to a lot of exhibitors out there, talked to a lot of people in the field. I mean, the only, I can't even say it's a downside because, to be honest, the weather was great. I mean, it was hot, for sure. It was hot, but no rain, no wind, no dust, no snow. So all in all, I'll take that.
Yeah, I'll never complain about a hot summer day. Mm-hmm. And we did get some respite from the hot weather every day at about 6:30, 7 o'clock. It would cool off and.
Yep. So it wasn't bad. From that standpoint, got to see, as always, a lot of familiar faces, got to meet a bunch of new people as well. And I don't have any complaints. It was a busy, busy, busy weekend.
Yes. I tried to find last year's numbers, but I couldn't find them. But my assumption is
funny that.
Because this year is 17,000 attendees.
Did you get that number from this year?
Yes, that's this year. But I wanted to compare it, and I'm pretty confident that that's a big jump in number. But I can't verify it. And I was hoping maybe you knew.
I'll tell you in 1 second because I actually have the number here
from last year.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't know. That sounds pretty ballparky, but let's see. Pacific Northwest had 16,100 attendees, according to my records.
So I'm not going to argue their stats, but If that's the number last year, it seems like the number would be a lot higher from the eyeball test.
Well, I will say, I believe I was told by somebody this year, I think you were with me. I thought they said there was 360 something vendors, 370 vendors, somewhere around there.
They almost cracked 400. They had 395.
Okay. So last year, they had 345.
Yep. The number you got was probably the number that was established a couple of days before it started. From my understanding, a bunch of people jumped on board like at the very last minute and they got spots.
Well, so there you go. So that's a whole 50 additional exhibitors that they had this year over last. So from a perspective of being, looking busy, it certainly was, because it was packed in there much tighter, I'd say, than it was last year. I mean, I know last year where the DIY showcase vehicle section was, where I was located, was completely full of vendors this year. Totally different setup.
That's the right words. Totally, totally different setup. If you were expecting what you saw the previous year, it was a different vibe, different do-it-yourselfers. The addition of creators being involved, which I thought was pretty cool, because there's definitely a huge intersection between creators and do-it-yourselves. A lot of your do-it-yourselfers are also creators. So I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
Had some big names like Kevin from Lifestyle Overland over in that section. We had Jason from Primal Outdoors. I could keep going on. They had a nice list of people in that area. You could just hang out in that area, which we did a lot.
Which we did, for lack of having a truck. That's what we did. Yep.
Now, again, I'm leaning on you. Were there more or less instructors? I definitely know there were more classes.
I don't know.
And bigger classes.
I don't know. I'm not really sure. I will tell you that I was involved with more classes than I was last year. As do a few of my fellow instructor friends. They said they had more classes this year too. So if I had to take a guess, I'd say it was about the same amount of instructors, or maybe a few less, and more classes. So thus we had more to teach. I don't know that. That's not scientific though. So I'm not really sure.
Same here. And I talked to quite a few of the instructors. They all reported larger crowds in their classes. And a lot of the classes, maybe they only taught it once or twice during the event. This year they were doing it like 3, 4, 5, maybe even 6 times, depending upon the class. I think that's a good thing. You know, I'm always talking about education, and I love that people were that interested. The tents even looked bigger. Am I accurate on that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe.
They kind of looked like event tents.
Yeah, they were definitely closer together. There were a few, I think, that were bigger. I will say that my final class of the weekend that I was in was at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And typically Sunday afternoon is sort of a crapshoot as to whether or not you're going to get and what kind of attendance you're going to get in that class. I was fully attended in a bivvy. I mean, we're talking about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And as you, I don't need to tell you, it was like, hot as Hades. we were in the bivvy in the middle of the showcase area, and it was totally full. And I ran over unintentionally. I ran over on that class by almost 40 minutes. So I just kept going, and people kept asking questions. Nobody was leaving. Nobody was moving. There was not another session coming in after us. So nobody was asking us to leave. And I happened to look at my watch, and I was like, whoa, we're way over time, which is fine. But it kind of shows the engagement, and particularly on a Sunday afternoon, that was good to see.
So anyone listening who hasn't attended an expo, the significance of being there 40 minutes after and having a packed house, I just want to emphasize that even people who may have taken, or I'm sorry, yeah, they had chosen a class on Sunday. A lot of times they'll check off the class, but then they don't go because it's at the end of the day and they want to leave early. So that's an incredible thing to have a complete class on Sunday, let alone it going over 40 minutes.
Right.
Yeah, you messed me up. I was waiting for you for 40 minutes.
Yeah, you're right. And I was like, oh no, my was supposed to be over a long time ago.
And we always talk about West being like the most international of them. I think the Pacific Northwest is in competition for that now. They had people from Canada, Australia, Ireland, Germany, the United Kingdom, Puerto Rico. There were several people that were on the Pan-American Highway that actually took a break to come to the show. So there was like a big international presence, which I was surprised about, to be honest.
There was, and there was a fair amount of travelers coming and going that were came in for the show. I mean, maybe it's partly that Redmond is sort of, I'll call it en route for people that are, you know, maybe Pan-Americaning or going to Alaska or doing some Canada transit. So the location is really good for that. I would agree. I think of the four Overland Expos, Flagstaff and Redmond are probably top of the list for that kind of response from the international traveler crowd anyways.
Yeah, and you know, I was telling you, I was looking forward to my drive home. Everybody was all concerned. It was like, are you going to be okay driving? Are you going to be tired? And I'm like, no, that's one of the highlights. Mm-hmm. Ironically, I just posted a few little snippets of my ride home. And for those who don't know, I only live about 5.5 hours away. It took me all day just because I was enjoying myself. But anyway, I just tried to give an idea that you can pretty much get to any destination. If you get off the highway, it's a beautiful drive. I don't care where you go, in Oregon or Idaho or Washington. The Pacific Northwest is a beautiful place. Get off of the highway.
Agreed. So what didn't you like about Expo?
I have a few things. Nothing.
I love stirring the pot. Why wouldn't we do that?
Well, this is probably, I have the least complaints. I don't even have complaints. One, if you didn't have a water bottle, it was hard for you to get water because they had bivvies all over the place with lots of water. There was plenty of water, but if you didn't have a water bottle, you didn't have any way to get the water. So that would be the only thing, is they have some kind of cups, or if they don't have cups, just, they need to put that on their website. Hey, make sure you bring a water bottle.
Or maybe we can get a exhibitor out there to put some water bottles in the swag bag when you get it.
I like that. I
think about that as being a cyclist. Almost every cyclist event I've ever been to, you know, you get a water bottle inside your goodie pack when you check in. So I just think, thinking about that, then nobody would have an excuse. And we would be, you know, not having to, you know, throw away waste products, you know, that way.
Yeah. But other than that, I liked the bivvies because there was always plenty of water. There was always plenty of chairs, and you know how it's set up. So it also got you out of the sun. So the other complaint they couldn't do anything about is, boy, was it hot.
When I was super busy, I wasn't as focused on it, but boy, I tell you, when you had like about 2 minutes in between something and you just stand there and you're like, wow, it's hot.
I meant to stop by a couple of the awning vendors to see how business was going, because if you didn't have a awning on your vehicle, oh boy.
I talked to Brian at Tembo Tusk, and he said that they totally sold out of all the scuttles they brought, which was a lot. And I think he said that they didn't sell a single fire pit, which I laughed because, you know, it was the opposite of like Expo West, where they sold just a ton of fire pits because, you know, cold at night.
So the fireplaces are definitely a sign of how the weather is going. And usually at night, you look around and every group of people that are camping, there's a fireplace going. I didn't see not one fireplace.
Oh, no way.
But the weather was so beautiful at night. It was just right. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't too cold. And then later on in the night, it would get a little cooler. So yeah. If you were sleeping there, I'm sure you got a great night's rest.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. My only complaint, I'll throw it out there. I would like to see something modified about the do-it-yourself area of vehicles, because I think that's so crucial to this kind of event. I think there's so many people that come to this event to see exhibitors, and largely why are they looking at exhibitors? They're looking at purchasing products because they're building something on their truck. So for me, the do-it-yourself area is key to this event. In fact, I can't tell you how many people came up to, you know, because I'm generally located in there. I can't tell you how many people came up to me and asked me, you know, as newbies, where do you recommend going to see? Where should I start at the show? And I would tell them, go to the do-it-yourself area, see what other people have built, different ideas. The range always is, you know, from big trucks like mine to Jeeps to ambulances to you name it. So my complaint centers around a couple things. One, I think it should be a little bit more central. I felt that this year was even more, I don't know whether we're not farther out. I don't know. It felt like it was pushed to the side farther even than last year. And last year it wasn't by any stretch in the middle of the event either. So I think that, you know, something that would maybe bring it somewhere in the middle, even near the bar, you know, the happy hour location, you know, there's some area around there. Cause I don't know that it necessarily has to be big. So I'm not suggesting that like it has to be, you know, a huge area with lots of vehicles, but something that's central that people can see easily, is one. And then two, I think that there has to be, you know, how do I say this? This is how I get this, where I get in trouble. I think there has to be consideration. And by the way, this is super hard to do on just, or maybe the format. I guess, let me start at the beginning. I don't like the word showcase. The Overland Expo has used that as far as back as I can. I think it's always used that. I don't know what that means, showcase vehicle. I hate that word. It's kind of like I hate the word, you know, van life or whatever. I prefer nomad, like, cause it kind of tells you more about what's going on. Showcase vehicle. What does that mean? That could be SEMA, right? That could be just a truck with a bunch of parts on it, you know, looking fancy. And that, I don't think that's what people are looking for in that section anyway. So the DIY, I like do it yourself / creator, because oftentimes, you know, those things go hand in hand. I'm not saying exclusive, you have to be a creator to be in the DIY section, but I would almost merge the two together and call it the DIY creator section, put them in amongst one another. So it's not two separate sections. And I'm not saying to exclude people that are not creators or vice versa, but, that's kind of what I saw. And then, you know, the requirement is that you, each person in that section do a class and they become an instructor then. You know, not everybody is necessarily suited to being an instructor. So what I'd like to see is an outline of here, if you get accepted into the DIY creator area, these are the requirements that we would like to see you abide by. And a couple things that I noticed is attendance at your vehicle. I'd like to see a better attendance at the vehicle. A lot of times I would walk around, because after all, the people that I sent to that section to go look at DIY trucks, if they can't ask questions, if there's nobody to answer a question, it's kind of defeats the purpose. So I think there should be a requirement for the amount of time. And I know that's hard, but like try to get people to, you know, be at their vehicle more often. And I think that's where it's at for me. And maybe forget about the fact that they've got to teach a quote organized class about it, because that becomes hard. And just try to get you know, some more rules in place and an explanation as to what we expect them to be doing when they're in that section. You know, these are the things that people may be looking for, and maybe even make it organized where there's a, you know, there's a sign that says, you know, these 14 vehicles are in here. So-and-so, you know, Mercedes Unimog owned by John Smith and, badass brunette, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she's here as a creator slash DIY. This is what she's driving and kind of something like that. I don't know. That's just me. And the reason I'm thinking about it is because I spent so much time in that section this year, not with a truck. So I kind of got to walk around and I walked around a bunch of times. And I got to tell you, there was a number of times, you know, there were a few people I walked around to, like, I don't know, five, maybe even 10 times. I never saw them. So, you know, if I didn't see them, nobody else did either.
I had that same experience. And you helped me actually to remember something I kind of had an issue with. I know some of the people from Overland Expo actually watch our podcasts, so maybe they'll hear this. Now, you know, I probably irritate people asking all the questions that I ask. I'm constantly asking questions. And one of the things that came up was people couldn't find the do-it-yourself section and had walked past it. And I didn't have so much of an issue. I don't like that it's like in the back. But even when you got to the back, there's a row of vendors in the front. So you can literally walk past and never see that the DIY is there. Second thing is DIY and signage. I have never seen the word do it yourself in print anywhere on the website, at the actual place, on a flag or anything.
It's a good point.
Which also rolls into something else. And this is what I'm hoping that they hear, because this was a constant complaint that I heard from all kinds of people. Overland Expo's signage was the least visible of all the signage. And when you did see it, it was the hardest to read because of the color choices. It was not a good contrast between the color and the letters. And I heard this from many people.
Yeah, it's white letters on green.
And not like a dark green, and it wasn't like a pure white. It was almost like a beige type white. So they, yeah. And I can understand that because I got bad vision. So I'm totally with that. And sticking on the signs. Okay, you go to the app and it says blah, blah, blah is at G14, right? Well, you can't figure out even where the G section is unless you're a vendor and you know to look down for that little itty bitty little flag that says G on it. So there needs to be signage, at least for the sections. At least you get me to the section, I can figure it out. Mm-hmm. But I think it should be a notable flag for the section. And once you go into the section, each vendor should have a very visible number. Because I didn't even, you know how I used to go around and get little snippets from the different vendors and they'd be like, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. And I'm in G, whatever, whatever. Well, I stopped doing that because people would be like, I tried to find them. So.
No, okay. Yeah. Because you might as well be talking Japanese at that point. You know, if you say G23, that means absolutely nothing to most people. Now, there is an app. The app is pretty good, honestly, if you go through it, and maybe because I go to a instructor meeting and listen to it and we go through it, and I probably get it at a much higher level than your average participant or even a vendor for that matter. It would be super nice. We talk about this. We've been talking about this for a couple of years to have geo tracking on it where you can, you know, it'll track and send you there. Would be awesome. Yeah, you are here. Obviously there's room for improvement on that. But I think it's the combination between the app and maybe that's training people or putting more signage up and telling them at check-in, there's an app. Get this app. You're going to be lost without it. You know what I mean? Like that's the start. It's the training part. Go ahead.
And I think they should even do like a little video. They have a video for everything they do.
That's true.
Do a quick little 15-second video for that.
Yep. That's true. You know, and then, like you said, each section, maybe they could make it, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've run events before, so these are the things, and I get it. I don't take this the wrong way. I mean, I've done this before. It's hard as hell, you know, so, you know, and it's something, but the problem is sometimes it's hard to see the forest through the trees, because when you're involved in the plan and the layout of it, obviously you understand it at a much higher level. So sometimes you forget. I know I've been guilty of that before, where I'll be like, this is not that hard, guys. You know, it's like, it goes around. It's hard if you weren't involved in it.
We tend to think that like our complaints are the only complaints.
Yeah.
And, no. Well, between me and you, we pretty much know everybody who is working and running and putting this thing together. Yeah. And we barely talk to them during the event, because they are so busy. It is not an easy job. It is not a simple job. Even though you're probably responsible for one thing, well, that one thing has many, many webs.
Yeah.
And shout out to what they've done. It's easy to come look at something and with hindsight critique it. And that's exactly what we're doing. If they do everything I tell them to do, I got another 20 I could probably pop up whenever. Wow.
Or something else will pop up, you know, because we complained about the green, the banners with white writing, and next, you know, it'll be purple with something else we can't read, right? Or be different, or who knows?
But I think they can stick with green and white, but it needs to be like forest, dark, rich green, and it needs to be pure white so that there's contrast.
Yeah, and
you know, their signs should be taller than everybody else's or shorter than everybody else's.
And that's hard, because I want to recall back in the old days, this is probably before the fancy little, I don't call them wind blowing things that everybody uses now. I want to say they had signs that were, you know, stretched between two pole kind of signs, which, by the way, are easy to see because they tend to be higher. And I think maybe somebody said this to me, you know, at Expo. It's like when you go to SEMA or you go to an indoor Expo kind of show, you know, you're looking at things hanging from the ceiling. So it's easy to look across the whole thing, go up, there's section K. Mm-hmm. I can see it, right? So, you know, the height is definitely, it's hard with an outdoor event because obviously you get wind and you get other stuff. And the next thing you know, there's crap's taken off. But I know we got off tangent here a little bit, but my thing with the do it yourself area, definitely, I agree. The signage, well, part of it's confusing because if you look at the map, you know, if I look at my app here, I want to say it calls it showcase, or there's too many words. That's the thing, is it's just like DIY or do it yourself, or showcase, or, you know, creator. And then it becomes what, you know, just too much going on. So less. I do love the fact that it's near the classrooms, and I understand that
they need to stick to that.
They do need to stick to that. You get the traffic coming in and out to the classrooms. And I want to say this respectfully, but I feel like the people, yeah, I know, right? The people that are more inclined to go to education and classes are also probably the people that are more inclined to be generally interested in the do-it-yourself area, right? So they go well together. I, you know, the people that are just simply coming to an expo to grab the latest hot ass gadget to strap to the side of your truck may not be as interested in that. That's the best way I could say it.
There's also another section of people, and I think I'm part of that section. There's some people who, they're never going to build a vehicle from scratch, but they are absolutely going to be involved in the build. And as much as they know how to do, they're going to do.
Yep.
So it definitely needs to be more focused on the words do it yourself than showcase, because the word showcase kind of like dilutes the words do it yourself.
Yeah, because it kind of
that could be a person who just bolted a bunch of stuff on. You know what I mean?
Which, by the way, is most of the do-it-yourself area is not built from scratch, right? I mean, you had Toyotas and you had Jeeps and you had vehicles that were obviously didn't necessarily build the whole truck. and they bolted things on. They added, you know, in you know, rooftop tents and custom fridge slides and things like that. So, you know, that to me, I agree. Showcase gives me the whole showcase sends me to SEMA. You know, I'm thinking when you say showcase, I'm thinking, you know, something came in on a trailer that doesn't drive. You know, it's to showcase
right
stuff. And, you know, that's why I don't like that word. I don't think that's indicative of what we're trying to do.
I don't think this is a good word that I'm using, but it's just an example of to make my point. It needs to be like do-it-yourselfers who live in their vehicle or traveling. Yeah. Do it yourself. There needs to be an accentuation that I didn't just build this rig for the show.
Right. Right. And that, by the way, was the case. So if I took this event reality and walked to each one of those rigs that were in that section, those people, from what I can tell, every one of them is traveling in it full time or at least going out on big trips with it or, you know, using it to whatever they're using it for. They're none of them came in on a trailer.
But you know that because you know that. So this brings me to something else, just a suggestion. They should, and I may be using the wrong word, they should have some kind of little podium or something in front of each vehicle, some kind of little stand or something that you can walk to and like, oh, that's Michael Ladin, drive the globe. He's been to X amount of countries, maybe even a small list of the build out or whatever.
And that's kind of what I go back to about instead of focusing them on doing an hour class on their rig, being around the truck more and having a set standard of, okay, everybody that attends this, or like you just said, that would be a great idea, actually, Phil. Here's the questionnaire. Fill out this questionnaire. We're going to print it up, give it to each truck. So each truck can post, sort of like when you go to a car show, right? It's a 2001 Land Rover. It's been to, you know, 46 countries. I built it over the last 6 years, but whatever the story is. And each one has systematic story. Because look, I've been in that section enough to know everybody that comes by asks, you know, what kind of engine does it have? You know, what do you do with the truck? How long have you had it? You know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, everybody gets
one
that
of
same
the problem. Reasons your vehicle, when it's there, is generally the most popular vehicle in the whole do it yourself. One, it's a big ass orange truck. But another reason is while you're talking to somebody, I can go to your little table and get all the information that I want to know about the vehicle. I can get a card, I can get a sticker, I can get information.
Yeah, so there needs to be something like that.
Even if they don't make little podiums, maybe when you apply for it, once you get your stuff back, you have to fill out something about your vehicle, and then they create a QR code. Mm-hmm. And you stick the QR code on your windshield or whatever, and people can boom, and then they can look on their phone because people love to look on their phones.
And how about the QR code goes to the app? So you could load up each one of the do-it-yourself vehicles in the app. You know, it's got it on the app. You could see the section, but then we could click on each individual thing and go, oh, that's, you know, there's John and he's got a Toyota, you know, so that it just these are just ideas that would make it fluid. Cause I noticed this weekend, it was it was one of my low points in a sense. And really, I think that had to do with, like I said, the walking around and not seeing people at their vehicle. Because trust me, I was genuinely interested in a lot of these things. I love going around and seeing this stuff.
It wasn't good for anyone. I mean, I'm there as media and I want to talk to those people. I want to get rig walk arounds. I want to get explanations. And I know most of those people. So it's not for a personal satisfaction. But then there are those who have traveled a long distance to see somebody that's going to be in there and they want to see that rig because they are thinking about getting one or they have something similar. It's a real downer to go there two or three times, which I witnessed, and the person, you never can catch them.
And that's once again why I kind of feel like integrating the creator section into the do it yourself area would be good, because, so, you know, having got the opportunity to be in that area a lot this past weekend, you know, you look at Jason from Primal, or you look at Kevin from Lifestyle Overland, those guys are at their trucks all the time.
They and never talk to
people, right? Because, you know, people are coming over for autographs, basically. but that is a great, and then everybody, you know, gets to see their truck, gets to see the rig. So the interaction there is fantastic. And that's kind of why spicing them in amongst the DIY, because they are DIY, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there is no difference. I mean, Jason built this truck, as did Lifestyle Overland. Those things are custom outfitted. Those are DIY trucks, right? So those guys are there and they get it. And the contrast is like, so they're like what you would find from a vendor. You're not going to Dometic or going to, you know, Go Power or going to Tempo Tusk or anybody and not having anybody at the table. Right. No, they're there to interact with the guests. And that's my point. So the contrast between that and then going to somebody's rig that's also taking up a real estate space, right? You know, no more than Tempo Tusk is taking up a space at that in a general community, as is a truck in the DIY area. So, you know, I would like to see the same, you know, the same thing instead of a big contrast. Like, you know, and I get it. You go to a vendor, they're there to sell. They're going to be there. They're going to be, some of them are, you know, damn near used car salesmen. You know,
and I get that. I understand everybody's not overt. They're not social or whatever you want to call it.
Correct.
So there should be two do-it-yourselves. There should be like do-it-yourself A, which is like you and guys like you actually inside the event. And then maybe the camping that's right by the gate that everybody passes by, make that the secondary do-it-yourself. This is a place where you put your vehicle, mm-hmm. you lock it up, you camp. People can walk around and look at it, and you don't even have to be there.
That's interesting. You could have like a DIY camping. You know, you've got like premium camping. You've got, I thought you had family camping area, but apparently I found out I'm wrong on that. I thought there was like a quiet section or a family area. There is, to my knowledge, there is. I thought there was. Maybe that was in the old days. I don't remember.
You know, there's Northwest Overland Rally.
There's moto areas. There's, you know, there's different areas. You could have like a you know, a DIY sort of camping area. And like you said, it's kind of where you put a collection of those vehicles, but not people that want to put the extra effort in to stand there. And like you said, maybe they're not that social to be there all weekend. Those are the people that are going to get into the do-it-yourself area inside, because that's an application process. It's a whole different thing to get inside there. You know what I mean? So that's an idea. That's a good idea, Phil. I like that.
Yeah, because there was one vehicle that I showed you. I don't want to say the sex of the person or what kind of vehicle, because I don't want to, you know, bring a spotlight on them like that. But they were there by the vehicle, but they were not good at explaining really about their vehicle. They didn't have that kind of energy level or whatever. But it was a vehicle worth looking at. And that person would have been perfect in a situation where they weren't required to do it. I almost felt sorry for the person. They were kind of, you could tell this was not their thing, their vehicle was absolutely worthy of being there.
Yeah. And like you had said earlier, maybe they could have done it easier if, like you said, there was a podium or whatnot in the front that had the details on it that was done for them already, you know, some aids that helped them. And to go back to, I know I'm harping, to go back on what I said earlier about not necessarily having them do an hour long presentation on their vehicle. That definitely scares people. You know, that personality type is not, you know, they're going to be panicked for hours upon hours getting ready to talk to people that might show up with their truck. It's not their personality type. They're afraid. So, you know, that's another thing to consider, you know, and that might either A, limit who applies, or B, just make the whole thing more stressful, which doesn't help on the presentation side. So anyways, we'll probably talk enough about the DIY. The only reason I think a lot about that is because I do think the do-it-yourself thing is critical to that event, because I do think that, as particularly when you look at a number like this, so I'm looking at a number over here, you said there's 17,000 attendees and 395 exhibitors. So think about that. So that's close to 400 exhibitors in a, you know, how many exhibitors per attendee, you know, like, so obviously there's a large demand for, because every vendor turns into a DIY, right? You buy something, you're inevitably going to do something with it. Right.
Right.
So I think that's a critical part of the show.
And just so you know, 17,000 attendees divided up by 395 vendors comes out to about 43.
There you go. So good thing you came up with that, because my math skills are, boy, I don't even think they let me go on the podcast.
Oh, thank God for calculators.
Yeah. We've been all day trying to figure that number out.
And wait a minute. I don't even know about calculators, because we've used calculators for food when we're throwing parties, and it never works out for us.
No, we get back and go, okay, now how many slices of cheese are we supposed to have? How come that don't match? Like, I thought, remember the one year we had four times the amount of cheese than we were supposed to, because we just completely botched it up.
Oh, we couldn't serve you a double cheeseburger, but we could give you a double cheese.
That's right. Yep. Anyways. As far as that, no, I mean, that's the only thing I noticed about the event, from that standpoint. But other than that, you know, everything else was, you know, right on point. I think, I mean, it was just, you know, you could nitpick lots of little things, but in general, the staff works their butt off.
Absolutely.
It's organized as hell, really. The only other thing was, which they admit it was kind of messed up, and I think it was a screw up, but the check-in for the instructors was like somewhere off in what I call the Serengeti. I mean,
instructors, because I had to go there too.
I know, that's right. Your media did too, right? Oh my God. We had maybe we need to work out a little bit more, but we had to take a golf cart back. There was no making that after we got there in the heat. There was no making it back.
That was so funny, because we went over there as a group, and I think we got a pretty macho group, you know? Yeah. But when he said, would you guys like a ride back? We sounded like a choir. Yes.
Yep. Oh my Lord. That was way out there. Cause I've kept thinking it wasn't making any sense to me either. Cause we were in the instructor camping area, and then they're like, well, the instructor check-in is over there. And I go, that's the farthest away you could get from the camping. That doesn't make any sense. That can't be right. There's something wrong here.
It was away from Overland Expo.
I know. Oh, too funny. That was funny. That was, you know, whatever. That was fine. But I know things like that happen. But yeah, Deschutes Expo Center is a beautiful, if you've never been there, it's a beautiful grounds. Has room for expansion, as we could find out, because I suppose you could expand the event out that way. You know, it had a lot of room, you know, grass. It's like almost a golf course grass. So, I mean, that part is super nice. And
that's one of the biggest compliments they got that I heard repeatedly, that they liked the grass in camping. Yeah. I've never heard compliments about grass before, but it was a nice thick grass.
Yeah.
And it absorbed any kind of rain or a beer drop or whatever. It was good on the feet, and there was no dust. I don't recall getting any dust at any moment during that whole event. I'm sure there was some dust, but I didn't experience it.
I didn't see any dust. Food truck game is great. I mean, I would expect that anyways, probably from the Pacific Northwest, but the food truck game was great.
Let's talk about that, because I don't think the food trucks get enough love at Pacific Northwest. And we did a, what would you call it last year? We did.
We ate all the food from every food truck last year for a video.
Yes.
That's what
it was. And it was some good food. We actually started out making a big mistake, because we were eating everything they were serving us, and we had to eat it all.
Yeah, this year I probably went to maybe four different food trucks, maybe five. All good. So, yeah, I mean.
So what was your favorite?
Oh, wow. My favorite. You know what? So I went to the Mexican one. I cannot remember the name. It's got a cool name, cool logo. They go to all the Overland Expos.
The black truck.
Yeah, the black truck. Yep. That they make the best quesadilla you're going to get. You know, I mean, it's huge. I went to the stir fry place with you and got a bowl. I got a steak and cheese at the place around the corner there. I can't remember the name. That was killer too. And I went one other, I went another place too. Oh, I got the corn dog. I had a, maybe not so healthy, but had a little breakdown. I had to have a quick corn dog.
Those corn dogs are excellent.
Yeah, they are.
A good dog. I wouldn't even, it was almost like a sausage. I mean, it was real quality meat in it.
Yeah.
And I had mine with some kind of, they put some kind of syrup on mine.
Yeah.
And mustard. Yeah, and I never thought of syrup and mustard together, but boy, did they work on this corn dog.
Yeah, it was good.
So my favorite was the yakisoba.
That's the noodles.
The noodles.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were new to the event and they were busy the whole time. I saw their little cartons of noodles everywhere.
It was also impressive to watch because they had like a wok that was, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 feet wide, right? And they were making, and what I liked about it, being in my, in the restaurant business, they didn't overdo the menu, right? They only had like 3 things on the menu. Keep it simple, stupid. Put it out, boom. That was your choices. Basically, they had chicken or vegetable, like, you know, a vegetarian and a chicken one. And then boom, out it goes. Oh boy, it was good though. Really.
And
really
the good. Mexican place that you mentioned, like you said, they're at every event. So if you're going to the next event and you're looking for this truck, it's the black truck with the name you can't pronounce.
Right. Gold writing. And it's funny because not only can I forget how to pronounce it, I forget what it means because I know that the English translation, it's in Spanish. It means, it says is, it's not neither here nor there, but it's something like that. I don't remember. I can't remember the English or the Spanish.
Yeah.
Because
the only reason I don't know the name is because every time I see it, I'm like, what is that? What is, I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah. We're going to have to, let's make a point of the next one going and getting them to tell us how to say it and tell us what it means in English. Cause I forget.
I agree with that because the food is notably delicious.
Yeah.
So and they deserve their name said.
Yeah, and they're friendly. And they're the only ones that had Gatorade that I could find. And I'll tell you what, it got so hot out there, I needed some Gatorade.
So I want to make a point of talking about the Overland Expo Foundation. Mm-hmm. People were really giving up the money. They got over $15,000. And, you know, they do a raffle. Eva is the person who does the raffle. It was exciting as usual. I loved seeing people giving and receiving. And I just wanted to talk real briefly about the Overland Expo Foundation because Overland Expo is obviously vendor-centric. People come in to look at stuff like that. But they have the Overland Expo Foundation that actually gives back. They actually make a concerted effort to look for those that are starting out that they feel like it would be good to help them out on their journey. And they need to be noted for that. And if you don't want to give any money, still go to the raffle because it's like one of the most happening events in the whole 3 days.
The other thing that's worth noting is at the end of the year, that their show, what is it called? I want to say showcase. Here we go. The truck and the motorcycle get auctioned off on Bring a Trailer, and the proceeds of that go to the Overland Expo Foundation as well. So I would imagine that happens after Overland Expo East. So I'm not sure what the time frame on that is, but we can find out and let you guys know. But
well, anybody who,
because I'm going to be bidding on that Triumph, I'm going to tell you that right now.
That's just what I was going to comment on. I think this year's truck and motorcycle are the best they've ever had, especially that motorcycle. The paint job on it is incredible.
Killer wrap.
Beautiful signature turquoise color. outfitted with Moscow all around. Talk about Moscow a little bit for those who don't know about that brand.
Well, I'm a huge Moscow Moto fan. I mean, they make both bags, luggage for motorcycles, as well as clothing. So riding gear, and it's top of the line. I mean, it's pretty much the best you can buy out there. It's certainly not cheap, but it is rugged as hell. And that I ride 100% with that.
Nowhere near cheap, but I've never heard anybody complain about the price. So no. I think that's the best example of the kind of quality that they have.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, buy once.
By the way, those bags that are on that Triumph there, that's going to go up for auction, are their 10th anniversary edition thing. So special edition ones, hard to get.
I'll try to find footage of the motorcycle, and maybe people will be looking at it. If not, I'm sorry. beautiful bike. You know, Eva is literally riding around the country on this motorcycle.
Rode there on that. Yeah. Yep. So, that's another, it's a good point you bring up on the Overland Expo Foundation. That's certainly something to talk about. You know, a lot of cool stuff happening there. So, there was some trail cleanups I heard going on, out in the bend in, Redmond area. Let's give a shout out to Redmond while we're talking about it. What
Absolutely.
A cool town.
Absolutely.
What a cool town. You know, I wouldn't have known all about it, but we had the opportunity to go out and hike. We walked what seemed like about 8,000 miles on the first night that we all came into town, decided it was a great idea to walk downtown, which was several miles. And but got to go to some breweries, a dive bar, a few other things down in the center, a really cool late night burrito place. Mm-hmm.
I don't know the name of any place that we went to.
Wild Ride. We went to Wild Ride Brewing. Yep, that was good. But Redmond is a kicking place. So it's you know, definitely worth checking out if you've never been to that area. So definitely. And you know, I have been there last year, but we didn't ever spend any time. Actually, you and I camped around that area for a while, but we never spent any time in the downtown there. So that was different.
And when we did go to Civilization, we were in Bend, which is wonderful. I highly recommend
Absolutely.
Bend, but you don't have to drive to another town.
Right.
You can stay right there.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize that Redmond is like the redheaded stepchild, sort of, you know what I mean? Like from Bend, but it's got its own cool vibe. In some ways, you know, it's probably what Bend was 20 years ago. If I had to take a guess, I don't know, but you know, that's got a its own cool vibe in its own right. So,
yeah.
And I've changed my mind, by the way, if anybody's listening out there, we should have the cool ride / Rigs and Brew event. For Overland Expo right there in Redmond downtown, you know, because
be a little clearer on what Rigs and Brews are. Everybody's not going to know what you're talking about.
Wednesday night in Flagstaff prior to the event. And by the way, they used to do it in Asheville, North Carolina for East when they had it there. They'd have, you know, sort of gets the community and the Overland Expo crowd together, parks cool rigs downtown, supports the local vendors and the shops that sell stuff, breweries, whatnot. And it gets people to actually spend some dollars in the community that the event is hosted in, which is what I like about it. So it's just, I don't know if it's called Rigs and Brews or Brews and Rigs, or I think it used to be called the Cool Ride Party. I think back in the East, they called it that. It was like, you know, same thing though, showcase off some cool vehicles and then interact with the downtown. So Redmond, if you're listening, or Overland Expo people, if you're listening, let's do it next year in Pacific Northwest, because that's definitely a place you could do it.
Absolutely. And there's plenty of breweries. There's plenty of restaurants. Mm. Talk about the food that we had at, what was it called? Brews and Ride?
Wild Ride Brew has like, I don't know, maybe 6 food trucks there.
Right. So it's a brewery and you can sit inside or outside, but attached to them, they have like a food truck park.
Mm-hmm.
And every food truck, we had our hardest thing was, what do we eat? Because it was something good at every one of these trucks. It wasn't like hot dogs and hamburgers. It was really good food.
Yeah. Well, we had, if I'm not mistaken, we had a bowl. We had noodle bowls there too, didn't we, Phil? I think I did.
I had a noodle bowl and I think I had chicken too.
I ate candy. Those guys had some pizza from another truck that looked killer.
And it wasn't a regular pizza.
No.
It was like an upscale pizza.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, just throw that out there. Thanks for to Redmond and to the local community. It was great. The gas stations ran out of ice. They ran out of cash. So obviously there was interaction with the town because, you know, we were hunting out. We went to that one gas station. They were out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed at the hotel there and everybody was super friendly. So yeah, different experience for me. Got out of my truck and got out for once.
And shout out to Sheila, Mama Got Wheels on Instagram, and to Candy, Chicks Do It Too, the numeral two on Instagram. They were pretty much our running buddies all weekend. We had a great time with them.
We absolutely did. Yep. So
and for those who don't know who Chicks Do It Too is, that's Candy Skehan. She's also an instructor. She has her vehicle in the do-it-yourself section. She's somebody that I absolutely think you should check out if you're at an event and she's there.
And she's going to be at an event coming up. If you guys are still out in the Oregon area, there's an event, not this weekend, but next weekend in Toledo, Oregon, near the coast. So it's called Holy Toledo. I believe they're expecting somewhere between 200 and 250 rigs out there and worth checking out. That's another overlanding and van life event. So if you're up in the Oregon area.
And what I like about the event, I have not attended yet. I plan on attending. What I like about its location is you're minutes away from the coast. You're already in the forest. It's a beautiful place to drive to. It's a beautiful place to be. So you know how I am. I don't just think about the event. I think about getting there and leaving there, making a trip of it. Absolutely in an excellent, excellent location. If people aren't familiar with Toledo, Oregon, it's basically next door to Newport, which is right on the coast. So most people will know Newport, Oregon. If you like Newport, Oregon, you'll really, really love Toledo because it's the best of both worlds. And that's thrown by your buddy Josiah. What is it? The Journal of Lost Time. You can look that up. The Journal of Lost Time. And they throw a bunch of events, but this is the one that's happening next week. And I give it the thumbs up for sure.
And while we're on that, we weren't totally sleeping on the job at Overland Expo. So we did do some podcasts. And one of the esteemed guests that we had on our podcast, I say one because there were a number of people on that one podcast, but is Josiah, who we got to interview. And that'll be coming to you guys at some point in the future, right after we get done editing it. Both of us. We're laughing because if you think sometimes Phil and I can get off the rails, no. We're pretty much straight laced on the rails all the time compared to that podcast.
Oh, he was off the planet.
Yeah. So we have to do some editing possibly. Otherwise, not only will we get kicked out of pretty much everything, probably Oregon and the United States and maybe Overland Expo and a few other things. So,
yeah, we've absolutely got to edit it or else it'll be a lot of or silence.
I'm not going to lie to you. It was a good time and it was a good interview. And we got some special guests on that. In fact, I don't know how many special guests we probably had a good 10 special guests on that one podcast alone.
Yeah, I'm going to go out. I'm going to venture to say that might be the biggest podcast in Overland history.
Yep.
Everybody was so, just regular people walking up. Oh, I don't want to spoil it.
That's right. So that was good. We also had the opportunity to do a podcast with Eva from Overland Expo, from you know, Naked and Afraid fame, from motorcycle BDR world fame. You're going to like that podcast as well. So that also is coming up. And this fall, she is doing the Rebel Rally. And we'll be talking more about that at a later date, because there's a lot to talk about that event as well.
I agree. So just so you know, Eva's is going to come out first.
Okay.
So this will be afterwards. I'm thinking about this coming out the day after, actually. I don't know. We have to talk
about it. Phil's in charge of scheduling. So I'm just talking to you guys. I don't know when that we're going to be talking about it, but always excited to get them out there.
Well, both of these are both Overland Expo centric.
Right. So they got to come out.
Yeah. So I'm thinking.
Josiah's will be out sometime between 2030 and 2035.
Right. When some of the FCC laws change.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Right. We need a bunch of laws to change first. That's a good point. Oh, boy.
So if you were going to explain Overland Expo Pacific Northwest to somebody who was like, I heard about that in 20 seconds, how would you explain the event?
I would say cool area, cool vibe, place to go to suck in information in the overlanding nomadic traveling world. And it's got a little bit of everything for a lot of different personality types and a lot of different backgrounds and people that have just a broad group of outdoor interests.
It's too late for change. You know, Overland Expo is the name, but I'm kind of getting like you, where Overland is becoming more like a misnomer. I wish we'd come up with some word that's all encompassing. Because when you actually meet the people, it's all encompassing. Everybody's not an overlander, and everybody's not a nomad.
Well, when I grew up, it used to be, we're going to go camping. I mean, right? And in my case, my dad would, we had this old, I just realized it was orange. And I don't know if maybe that was burned into my brain. Maybe that's where my connection to orange comes from. Oh, but we had this old
breaking news.
We had an old orange, I'd have to find a picture of that somewhere. Old orange Volvo station wagon. And like, I'm talking about the old Volvo that was like built like a tank.
Box. Yep.
And we had that. We would load everything up, put crap on the roof. We had a St. Bernard. The St. Bernard would somehow fit in the back, and we'd pile that thing high and head off to the backwoods of Maine or wherever. We went to Canada a few times, and that was overlanding.
I'm picturing this with the Volvo and everything. You guys were like the classic stereotypical New Englanders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And then we're off and, you know... But that was overlanding, right? We just didn't know that word then. And I agree with you, Phil, like that. I don't think that there's anything wrong with the word overland. And I don't think that it necessarily is misconstrued. What I do think is it has been confiscated or seized by commercial. It's been commercialized and turn into a keyword for I'm going to charge you more. That's what it is. So, you know, whatever, I don't care what it is. You know, if I got a flashlight here, I'm going to block the brand because it doesn't matter. You know, this, if I put the Overland edition on this thing, I could charge double. And somebody going to buy
it. I won't mention it either, but I happen to like that flashlight.
I love that flashlight. I think I got like six of them, but yeah.
So I just want to remind people that April 8th, 2024, we're going to have a total solar eclipse again. And you should start making your plans now. You know, I've... Go ahead.
Well, I don't want to do this live, but I'm going to do it live anyways, because that's what we do. So there's a solar eclipse that is going to happen at the moon landing event, which is, we've talked about this, I think, in the last podcast. That is in, I believe, October 12th of this fall in New Mexico. We're hoping for 1,000 trucks there. So that's going to be my worldwide West Coast debut of the new rig that I'm building. But it happens to happen with the solar eclipse. So I'm going to ask you live, Phil, because you know more about this than I do. Is that different than the one's going to happen next spring? What's the difference? Or what? I don't understand.
It's a different type of eclipse. Like the one that I'm talking about in 2024. Okay, basically, an eclipse is when anytime one star partially covers another.
Yeah.
The one in 2024 is a complete eclipse. They call it totality.
Okay.
So.
And what is this, the moon? Just the moon blocking the sun?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. But that's the same as this fall. It's still the moon, right?
Right.
Can you tell I have no idea what I'm talking about?
But the one in 2024, if you're in what's called the path of totality,
yeah,
what happens is it's a perfect alignment of the two, and it does not go completely dark. Around the edges, there's still light, but it covers enough of the sun where it's this eerie darkness that you'll never experience in any other.
Am I wrong in saying some eclipses, it covers like the whole thing or it doesn't have a halo? Is that what makes it different too?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay.
If you hear the word totality, that means it's the only one where it's in perfect alignment and it covers it and it'll have that ring. Yep. And if it's something you've never done before, it's not like it happens every year.
Right.
You got a few chances maybe in your lifetime to see it. If you can plan for it or you happen to live somewhere that's in the pathway to it, I highly recommend it because it's something that it's hard to explain to somebody. It's really something you need to experience.
Yeah.
The last one that they had that was complete totality, I made a plans and I went to Stanley, Idaho, which was right in the middle of the path. And it's one of the greatest experiences I've ever had. So I highly recommend it.
That's kind of why I'm super excited, even for this one in the fall. And I don't know what percentage that is. I know it's in the path. Mm-hmm. I believe it's very high. I want to say it's like 97% or something. It's very high.
Yeah, if it wasn't close, they wouldn't even mention it. It wouldn't even be a big deal. Yeah.
And I'm excited because that's in an area, obviously, that the likelihood is that you'll have a fairly good shot at a clear sky, right? Because it's in the desert.
And I just want to say something real quick about that. If your plan is to look at the eclipse, then you need to have special binoculars. I didn't know we were going to talk about this. I would show you mine. I have some from a company called Celestial. And that's pretty much the only way that you can look at it. Do not look directly at it. You will burn your retinas. Do not do that. I saw lots of people.
Oh, yeah. Not a good idea.
So and don't just get a brand that is a known brand like a Nikon or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's your eyes. Protect your eyes. Right. I'm half blind, so you know I'm always thinking about that.
Yep. Good. Well, a lot of exciting things coming up, so that's good. What's next for you, Phil? I know you got more stuff going on than I do.
Well, we just talked about one of them. I'm going to go to Holy Toledo. I'm going to hang out on the Oregon coast. Just for those who never, I don't think we even mentioned the date. It's July 20th to July 24th. So I'm going to go. I know a lot of the people who are going to be there, even though it's my first time. I'm pretty much guaranteeing a good time because it's a good time people that are going to be there. So I'm really looking forward to it. You know, Candy and Sheila are still in the area. They're going to it. So I plan on hooking up with them. I know Josiah, who's running it, plan on hanging out with him. I'm really looking forward to it. The past events he's had good music, good food, good people. And I expect the same at this one. And then I plan on going up into British Columbia to the BC Overland Rally. And I've talked about this podcast after podcast. It's something exciting that I'm looking forward to doing. I've never been to this one either. Been obviously to British Columbia. I damn near live at the border. Right. But I've never gone to an event, so I'm looking forward to this. And as far as in BC, I've never really done any outdoor stuff. That's a thing. When I'm going to BC, I'm going to the restaurants. You know, they got great restaurants. And so those are, and then after that, I got maybe a 2-week break, and then it'll be Overland Expo Mountain West, which I'm looking forward to. So what about you?
I have a embargo on events right now because I am building my house, aka the next Overland Expedition rig. So I got
an embargo you put on yourself, right?
That's right. That's right. So I'm if you guys could see what my place looks like right now, I'm in a vacant, unfurnished condo, basically, in Connecticut. And it is full of IKEA cabinets, toilet, just, you know, my sinks, my air conditioning, the microwave oven. I mean, you name it, it's here. Parts, lights, all sorts of stuff. So the truck is at paint right now. And because I'm taking advantage of that, I'm just basically I'm trying to build it almost backwards. I'm trying to make sure I have every single thing that I need, so when I have the truck and I'm here, I can be installing. So I'm at it, because I know it sounds like I have a lot of time, because it's what's today, the 13th. Yep. 13th of July, and I want it done by the end of August. That's going to be I'm going to have to stay up to 3 o'clock in the morning a bunch of days to get that to happen. So I don't have any events planned. I may be at Overland Expo in Colorado, Mountain West, but I have not confirmed that. And that because that occurs at the end of August, as I get closer to that, I will assess my situation as to whether I'm in deep trouble getting the truck done, or I'm actually doing well and I can afford to take 5 days off.
I got a question for you, Mike. I don't have a rig. I have a rig. I'm really new to this overlanding thing. I've never gone to an event. Why would I go to Mountain West? And don't give me the normal stuff like the training and stuff like that. I don't even know if I want to take training. I really don't know that much. Why would I want to go to this thing? Am I going to have a good time?
You're going to have a good time. I think that's a given. I think I've never not had a good time at any one of them, regardless of where it was located. Looking at the just numbers alone, essentially, with the exception of Overland Expo West, which is double the size, the other three Overland Expos all have approximately the same amount of attendance, approximately the same amount of exhibitors at them. They're all ballparking in the same scenario. Mountain West has the same, essentially the same kind of setup as Pacific Northwest, as a circle sort of thing. So, I mean, the expo that it's located at the ranch is very similar. So, and obviously there's a big population in the Denver, greater Denver area. So there's a lot of people that are fairly local to that. So if you're local, you got no excuse.
Right. And so you mentioned local. So you give me your opinion on this. Pacific Northwest, Mountain West, and East are similar in what you see.
Yep.
But the vibe is different at each one. There is a Pacific Northwest vibe, there is an East vibe, and there is a Mountain West vibe. And they're different. They're not different in any kind of negative way. It's just the local vibe seems to pour into the expo. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that. Yep.
So if you're a listener and you've gone to one of these events and you're like, oh, let me go to another specifically because I want it to be exactly like the others. Well, structurally, it'll be the same classes and stuff like that. But if you're going for the exact same vibe, no, it's going to be that vibe. And it should be something you look forward to.
Right.
That's what all of this is supposed to be about. You traveling and getting new experiences.
Yep. Yep. So that's my summer right now. And as hot as it was in Oregon, I will tell you that it's just as hot and more humid here in Connecticut.
Well, it's beautiful outside right now. I don't know what the temperature is, but it's not hot here. You know, it's about a 5.5 hour drive from there to my home on the highway, that is. And that 5.5 hour drive, it's a total temperature change.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's just, that's the coast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Drop something on the floor here. Okay. Yeah.
So I want to mention something to you, and you tell me what you think about this. This is kind of sort of political. Don't panic.
Here we go.
So in Albania, the Hoysa River, which is like the longest river that they've got, don't ask me the details. It's like maybe like, I could be wrong on the numbers, but it's like 1,200 to 1,700 miles long. It runs through the whole country. They turned the river into a national park. Now, let me be specific about this. They didn't just turn the river into a national park. The land, the whole way, is a national park. So there's no fight over water rights. There's no building your resort and making money off of it or anything like that. It's totally controlled and it will always be there. And 100 years from now, the experience will be somewhere in the ballpark the same. I'm sure there'll be some change.
Right.
I think that the U.S. should steal that idea.
Now,
we have
idea.
Like the New River Gorge, and that's why I was so specific. I'm sure people heard that originally. Like, we have a national park that's a river, New River Gorge. Yeah, but it's just the river. Mm-hmm. It's just the river. If you go, they have all kind of businesses and activities and private land along the way. So I could see issues. Well, they have issues now, but I won't get into those, but they're not big ones. And I can see bigger issues down the road. I think that the U.S. should adopt the idea of certain rivers being national parks. And the New River Gorge wouldn't be my first one. It would be the Colorado River, considering how long it is. That's more comparable to the one that I just described. Thousands of miles. Water rights is a very big issue. There's the use and the misuse of the land and the water. I think it's an excellent idea, even though, you know, I'm a person that tries to get as far away from government control of things. There are some things that I think they should control for the simple fact that we want those things to last and last forever.
I agree.
Okay, well, that's it.
So about that. You know, yeah.
Did I mention I was going to do the BC Overland Rally?
You did.
Okay.
Yep, mentioned it. Yep, yep. You got two events coming up. And then the Overland Expo Mountain West event. So it's three events. And then, and I've got... My committed events are Overland Expo East, which is October 6th through the 8th. And the following weekend, I am committed to the moon landing event in New Mexico. So that's also put on by Journal of Lost Time.
So I might as well tell you, it's been in the back of my mind to attend this for a while. Josiah has asked me He asked a while ago. He brought that up. And I've had it in the back of my mind to go, but I'm trying to work on a new rig. I have a wife.
I get all that stuff. Yep.
But I'm at like 80% that I'm going to be at the event. So you'll probably see me there. I've just heard too much about it. And I don't think it's in a dark sky area, but I know it's like close
to borders it. So if you look at their website, it's actually a beautiful area. It's like 2 hours west of Albuquerque, south of I-40. It is in Navajo land, and it borders the dark sky. So it is right there, and it is directly in the path of the solar eclipse, which I believe is on that Saturday.
And very, 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 very briefly, could you tell people what a dark sky park is if they don't know? And why would they want to go?
Well, dark sky park is a place where you can go that has been, there's an organization, basically, it's certified that it is a dark sky community. In other words, there's not light pollution. So you can clearly see the, the stars and whatever is out in the sky. So you don't have the night, right? I mean, you don't have the light pollution. That's the big thing.
So when I'm traveling, there's two things, and I'm talking about North America now. There's two things that I look for to kind of help me with my travel and what path I choose to take. And those two things are, I look for BDRs, backcountry discovery routes, yep. And I look for dark sky parks.
Yep.
And if you align your path to a majority of those, I'm guaranteeing you, I don't care where you're going throughout the North America, if you're predominantly using BDRs and traveling through dark sky parks, you're going to have 24/7 eye candy on your trip.
Yep.
So that's one of my little shortcuts that I use on how I navigate a trip.
I just looked on the website here. So we're talking about the moon landing event. It's at what they call, ironically, the name Skyview Park, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And it is 2 hours west of Albuquerque and about an hour south of Gallup. It's on a mesa overlooking the El Morro National Monument and bordering the International Dark Sky Park.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where it's located. It is in the desert. And I know from speaking with Josiah, he is anticipating close to 1,000 vehicles for that. So it's a big event.
Right. That I just want to see that with my own eyes.
Which, it was almost unbelievable to me until this year. When I went to one of the other events that Journal of Lost Time puts on is the Escapar a la Baja, which is in just outside of La Paz in Playa Tecolote in the Baja Peninsula. And that had, I believe, at grand total had about 1,200 vehicles. So it was mesmerizing. It was amazing how many people show up. And that's 1,000 miles south of the border.
You know what I just thought about? Josiah throws a bunch of events, right? This is an indicator of how off the rails our podcast was. I don't think we ever mentioned any events that he throws or anything like that.
No, because generally speaking, I would say all the events are politically correct and they're fairly calm. No, they're not calm, but they're, they're not pushing everybody's button. Whereas everything that we did on the podcast pushed a button, I think. So what's nice and what I can tell you in advance is we offended you. And I'm talking to everybody out there. I don't think we left anybody out. So really, we were completely fair. We just offended everybody.
I can't guarantee that we air that one. We've really got to listen to the whole thing.
But I will tell you, we were drinking High West old fashioned in a bottle. And that was our taste testing for that podcast. And I mean, maybe what went wrong is we started taste testing at the beginning of the podcast. I don't know. I don't want to give too much away.
Say maybe about 10 to 12 people came through our podcast on that one. We had a lot of people.
I would say it was more, but yeah.
We had Ozark.
It never ended, by the way. It never ended. It just faded. Right. It just faded. At one point, I think Phil got up. And then at another point, I got up. The podcast, by the way, was still going on. Neither one of us was even sitting there.
So people who I know were there. So Josiah from the Lost Time. We had Jason from Primal Outdoors. Uh-huh. We had Ozark Adventures.
Yeah.
Then we just had random couples
guests,
and families.
Yes, yeah. A bunch of random
and
guests.
Somehow, everyone we picked out of the crowd to come be part of the podcast was just as crazy as we were. So that just...
fascinating. Yeah, it was fascinating. And to say we were on went off on a tangent, that's not the correct... We were on a tangent from the first minute.
Go.
We were never on. We're just going to have to
hear it. It wasn't a surprise.
We're going to start our only... Well, we could talk about it. We could put it on the Waypoint Overland's OnlyFans page. Because there was a lot of discussion about OnlyFans and
I was surprised that so many Overlanders have OnlyFans.
Yeah, and you got to stay tuned anyways to listen to this, because then you can hear about the Naked Overland Expo, you know, because we talked about that. So, on that note,
is there anything else you want to say?
No, why we better get off now?
Well, guys, you know what I'm going to say. Stay safe, tread lightly, and hopefully I'll see you here or on the trail soon.
You have been listening to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints. Like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more.